This episode of the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast is sponsored by Aeroflow Sleep. Aeroflow Sleep is the nation's fastest growing durable medical equipment company, supplying CPAP machines, masks, and accessories to sleep apnea patients with eligible insurance plans. Not only do they conveniently ship CPAP supplies right to your door, Aeroflow Sleep takes it upon themselves to navigate the complexities of the insurance process. They speak to your doctor on your behalf so you can be confident in the treatment and coverage you receive without lifting a finger. If you're due for replacement parts, Aeroflow Sleep takes care of that too. They inform you exactly what's needed and when through a state-of-the-art online patient portal or via your preferred method of contact. I learned about Aeroflow Sleep 3 years ago, and I now support them as their patient advocacy expert. And what I love is that they're not just providing you with a product. They're genuine people. They're ready to serve you and looking to put the care back into healthcare. To learn more, visit their website at aeroflowsleep.com. That's A-E-R-O-F-L-O-W sleep.com. And learn more about Aeroflow Sleep today. On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So I thought I would start off today with an email I got that was so nice. You guys send me such nice emails. So this is the email I got from Ephraim. He said, "Hi, Emma. Someone recently turned me on to your podcasts, and I've been going back over the archive and getting a lot out of them. I was diagnosed with severe OSA around 15 years ago, although in retrospect, I was showing all the classic signs of UARS for the 15 years prior to that. I've been struggling to get a sustainable effective treatment this whole time." And so then he kind of talks through the different things that he's tried. Then he says, "Your podcasts have been a really good resource and also makes me feel a little saner to hear that I'm not alone in dealing with the limitations of the US healthcare system and trying to get my problems solved. Thanks so much for the work you do, and I hope you keep it up." So then, of course, I went back and said, "Thanks so much for your lovely email." And as I often do, I said, "Oh, if you'd be willing to do a rating and a review for the podcast, that really helps other people find it." And he emailed me back and he said, "Yeah, I just left you a review, but you need to work on getting more reviews, because I think the last review was from like last year." So you kind of know the drill if you listen to other podcasts. It does really help people to find the podcast. The more ratings and reviews you have, the better. So if you are so inclined, please spare a few moments and go and rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. It really does help the show. On to today's guests. Now I'm joined by two guests today. They have a podcast. It's called Sleeping Around the Podcast. And so I'm joined by Dr. Anne-Marie Morse and Matthew Allard. So I'll tell you a little bit about each of them before we get started. Matthew Allard is a Texas native and is currently the medical initiative consultant for SomnoMed USA. He's also owner and host of Sleeping Around the Podcast. He holds a master's degree in counseling and loves to serve. With almost 20 years experience in sales and a passion for health and fitness, Matthew's been focused on the benefits of sleep and breathing for the past 14 years. So I really enjoyed getting to meet Matthew properly, because I feel like we've been following each other for years and years. So he kind of explains a little bit more about his work background in the episode. And then our other guest, I could literally read her bio for like 10 minutes, but we're going to do a shortened version. So Dr. Anne-Marie Morse has nearly a decade of experience treating adults and children for neurologic and sleep disorders. In addition to being a clinician, she's also a researcher, educator, and administrator, and podcaster. Dr. Morse is fully invested in sleep health advocacy and increasing awareness about the importance of healthy sleep and the impact of sleep-wake disorders. She's well known for her expertise in sleep and her TikTok channel. Dr. Morse serves as a key opinion leader for pediatric narcolepsy and hypersomnia disorders. She frequently speaks at local, regional, national conferences and enjoys opportunities to provide content for media, schools, and community-based events. But she also served as the director of the pediatric sleep medicine and child neurology programs at Geisinger Medical Center since 2019. In addition to her duties as director of these programs, she also serves on program evaluation committees for Geisinger's adult neurology resident and pediatric residency programs. And I think I'll just pause there. I could say a lot more, but Dr. Morse talks us through a little bit about her, all the things that she does at the beginning of the episode. So I'm going to let her do that. So if you haven't yet discovered Sleeping Around the Podcast, I think if you like my podcast, you would probably really like their podcast. So I've put a lot of links in the show notes so that you can check them out on social media and YouTube and all the places. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Anne-Marie Morse and Matthew Allard. So welcome, the two of you. I'm so glad we finally made this happen.
Oh, we are excited. I have to tell you, I don't even know the number of text messages and emails I've gotten from Matthew telling me how excited he is for this podcast. I think he actually was more excited for this podcast than our own podcast.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's high praise.
I am a self-proclaimed Emma Cooksley cookie. I am part of the fan club of the cookies. I have been following this beautiful woman for over 2 years. She has worked with the company that I work for, SomnoMed, and just the way she does a podcast, Anne, is something that really motivated me and with what we're doing with Sleeping Around. She knows I'm a big fan. I always write her stuff on social. So I am honored. So I'm kind of geeking out right now. This is like,
oh my gosh,
my two favorite women in sleep at once. This is just.
Well, let's see what we can cover.
Yes, ma'am.
Right?
Yes,
so start out, for people that aren't familiar, start out with, we're going to get into all the stuff you guys do, which is a lot, but let's start out with each of you, like your day jobs and where you're based when you're not jet setting all around.
And sure. You go first.
Awesome. So I'm Emory Morse. I am a neurologist with special qualifications in child neurology and sleep medicine specialist. I run a division of child neurology and pediatric sleep medicine with a healthcare system called Geisinger in the Children's Hospital, Janeway Children's Hospital. We're one of the largest healthcare systems in the country. We cover 47 counties in Pennsylvania. In addition to my roles as the division chief, I also am a regular clinician. I see patients. I also am a clinical researcher and I'm a program builder. So I've built a variety of different programs. Two of them are very focused on sleep. One is called Wake Up and Learn, which is a school-based sleep education and screening program. And the other is called Sleep to Be Well, which is an integrated program that allows for us to do asynchronous screening and reflex back to a command center that will help patients navigate the sleep system, irrespective of if they're being seen by us clinically or through our health plan. And so I also am the program director of our child neurology residency. There's a lot of other things.
Me and Matthew are just like, and that's just the day job.
I
like,
know. I love for her to go first because, number one, she's a lady, and I like to let ladies go first. But then I tell people about me, and it's hilarious. So real simple, I'm Matthew Allard. My day job is being a father of an amazing 19-year-old. But also, I work for an amazing company called SomnoMed. So we do oral device therapy. I am currently based out of Oklahoma City. Yes, I have moved, Emma.
I did not know that.
I know. I pretty much cover North America I am what we call a medical initiative specialist. So basically my job is to marry the AASMs with the AADSMs. And for everybody out there who doesn't know what that means, I basically get the physicians and the sleep dentist together to treat.
We're super simple the way that you just told it, but it's actually not.
We're
going to get into that.
That's right. And I love what I do, and I love the company that I work for. Also, part of my day job is I get to help people connect. Ann likes to call me a sleep connector, so I'm very honored. I love serving. And so anybody who knows me knows that the book, The Go-Giver, was like this major influence to me. And this season in my life, I love serving. And so I love, one of the gifts I believe that God gave me was getting people in the right room at the right time. And so I'm so blessed to be able to partner with some amazing companies, not only with our podcast, Sleeping Around the Podcast, but also with some
which we will get to,
that I'm able to just, you know, help each other. So it's really a win-win-win. And so I'm very blessed. So I have a very good life, Emma. So thank you for asking.
Awesome. Yeah. So here's where I wanted to start. Like, I spent all my time talking to people with sleep apnea, their families, everyone that's kind of navigating all the treatment options and going to the doctor. I think maybe I get a behind the scenes look at how Dr. Morris is so involved with, you know, nonprofits run by patients, and you're doing so much in your own practice to keep everything really patient-centered. And I think you know how unusual that is, but it really is unusual. And I guess my first question for you is just, where did that come from? Like, did you have mentors? Did you learn that in medical school?
Yeah, no. And I truly appreciate that praise. And I can say I am very fortunate that I do know a lot of really, really great doctors, advanced practitioners who really walk the same walk that I do. So I'm definitely not the only person doing that, but I do very much appreciate that recognition. I would really say that I would go back to the reason I went into medicine. And I can only hope that if there are other physicians or healthcare providers who are watching this, that they might reflect on the reason they went into healthcare as well, because it's easy for that to get beaten out of you for a lot of other competing priorities and initiatives. And so the reason I went into medicine was because of the fact that my mom, when she was just delivered my brother, and my brother now is 30 something years old, so this was over 30 years ago, and I was only 5 years old, so I don't recall this. It's kind of, you get it from all the stories. My brother was 6 months old, and my mom experienced her first significant flare of multiple sclerosis. And she actually ended up wheelchair bound because she had very, very significant sensation loss and weakness on one side of her body. At that time, there wasn't a lot known about multiple sclerosis. And my brother was a surprise and four of four kids. And so she was met with, we're going to give you steroids if you get better, great. If not, this is your last kid, you're probably not going to have any other major issues. What my mom heard was, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And she thankfully improved and didn't require a wheelchair ongoing, but she then did not go to a neurologist for almost 20 years. Despite that, she had waxing and waning features across the rest of that time, where there were even times where she couldn't swallow. And if you would bring her to a doctor, they would ask her past medical history, she would say migraine. And I'm like, Mom, you also have multiple sclerosis. But because there weren't available treatments at the time, there was no hope. And for me, when I would hear that story and reflect on what is the role of the physician, even in a circumstance where the prognosis may be grave, there are no treatments, even if it's a terminal diagnosis, the role is to be a partner, because it's a journey. It's not a transaction. And your role in that moment is just the beginning. So that was the reason I entered into medical school. And just so everyone knows, I did make my mom start seeing a neurologist. And so I entered into medical school. And while in medical school, continue to have great mentors. I'm a DO, so as an osteopathic physician. And one of the things that's amazing about my medical training, and I went to what was UMDNJ, University of Medicine, Dentistry, New Jersey. It's now Rowan School of Osteopathic Medicine. And I have to give it a shout out because of several things. Number one, it provided
me... We should have
me...
talked about the whole New Jersey thing, but we'll get into that too. Well, yeah, anyone that starts following you on social media is like, New Jersey.
And so several things is number one, I was selected to enter in a program that was problem-based learning, which means that there was only five of us in this program and everything we did was based on a patient. And so day one of medical school was Mrs. Meadows is a 55-year-old woman who came to the ER with increased shortness of breath. Go. So we constantly were framing everything we learned around a patient, which was extraordinarily novel, where most medical school training still to this day is, right. Today we're going to cover physiology, and this is how the heart works. Today we're going to cover the lungs, where this was Mrs. Meadows, what is going on? Why can't Mrs. Meadows breathe? And that was my first 2 years of medical school. We met 3 days a week, 3 hours a day. Rest was independent learning. As a person with ADHD, I surprisingly thrived at that. Now, after that, the second part is, one of the big distinctions with osteopathic medicine is that you will get your hand slapped if you ever say the epileptic patient, the narcoleptic patient.
Yes.
It is Mrs. Meadows had asthma exacerbation. Mrs. Meadows is a 55-year-old woman who has children, who has a job, who has a life, who loves to knit. Like, that was the...
And I think sometimes people think that that's a really persnickety thing to talk about, but I had never heard calling people with sleep apnea apnics until I started going to medical conferences. And, you know, and it really does divorce the whole thing from there actually being a person who's dealing with this stuff, you know?
And never mind that. You now have defined a person by their disease.
Yes.
You have put a ceiling... It might be the last one. I can see through it. I may not be able to get through it. And that is something that is really very important because it also puts them into a box that there are not other things that influence the outcomes.
Right.
So that was my medical school experience. So you could see I probably was a little bit more challenging of a resident to work with because my mindset is a little bit different. And in the reality, it was actually my residency. I had incredible, incredible mentors who really encouraged me to continue. But I have to tell you, it was actually bad outcomes that made me really double down on it. And as an intern, there was a baby who was born full term and had come to the NICU just because it had low blood sugars. And overnight, they had to put in a central line. And a central line means instead of getting fluids through an IV, they have to kind of put it more deep into your veins. And so for babies, they do that through the umbilical cord area. And so they had put the line in. And when that x-ray had come back to make sure it was in the right place, we were all reviewing it in that morning. I had just come in. And my response was, oh, I think it's too high. It needs to be pulled back. And I was told, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And I was like, no, I think it's too high, but I'm the intern, right? I'm the youngest one on the team. I've been a doctor all of 3 months, right?
Right.
What the hell do I know? And so it's fine. I'm like, but isn't it in the right atrium? I really think it's too high. And it's like, and now it's like, Anne-Marie, it's fine. The next day I came back, that baby was dead. And I still have a hard time telling that story without crying. But for me...
But it taught you to trust your instincts.
It taught me to trust my instincts.
Yeah.
And it taught me to always honor the science you know. Lead with evidence.
Yeah.
Lead with evidence. And in residency, I had one attending who would always quote Carl Sagan and say, the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence either. And so that also forced me to make sure I listen and trust my patients. Because they are experts in themselves. And so over time, what had happened is because of challenges, which many people would have maybe got crippled by, it helped embolden me. And it drove me to have relationships with patients and families that, irrespective of their outcomes, really reinforced how important the very first step of what I do is the relationship that I have and I build and I truly honor. And I have to tell you, because of that perspective, I have never worked a day in my life. Even on the weeks where I was up all night and I might have worked 100 hours, I always felt as though that it was something that was so rewarding, it never felt like a day of work, and has led me to meet incredible people and fall into a career where I do get the honor of being able to partner with major advocacy organizations and beyond. To be able to look at how do we transform care
and make change.
I was just gonna say, so I'm not on a podcast being an N of one. Why are you the outlier?
Right. Yeah. So, Matthew, I actually didn't know about your background before Somnamed until I like totally went on LinkedIn and did some great research. So you came at it from more the CPAP medical side before you went to Somnamed.
Yes, ma'am. My journey started in sleep started in 1999. I had just gotten married to an amazing person who was 5'6" and 115 pounds and was diagnosed with freaking everything. Our relationship, I was a youth minister, and so we didn't have a lot of insurance and stuff, but found out from a very good friend in Lafayette, Louisiana, that she needed a sleep study. And I was like, what is a sleep study? And they hooked her all up and did this. And so my journey actually started back then. And what happened with Kelly is that her airway was extremely small, recessed chin. You fast forward to 2007, she's having myofascial reconstruction from Stanford. And a chin implant. My daughter, who I just talked about earlier, 19, has the same bone structure and everything. So my daughter has been on it for hers, shout out ResMed, since she was 14 years old. So I'm a big proponent of CPAP.
Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leaks, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not alone, and I wrote a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions Workbook is out now and has been designed to give you solutions to all the most common CPAP problems. Visit sleepapneastories.com to order now. That's sleepapneastories.com. So that with your wife happened before you started working in sleep?
Absolutely. Yes. I have had friends with Respironics that worked before it was Philips way back when.
And so what was the, I'm really interested in, you know, what your wife's reaction to that was at the time. Was it this like crazy out of nowhere thing that no one had heard of a sleep study?
Unbelievable. We were at the point where she was part of a group on social media that dealt with trachs, and it was a group of women that all got together. That's where they were almost at. And so, yes, back then, to be put on a CPAP, it was just a straight blower. Yes, they might have had some medicine in there to kind of relax her at first to get used to it for a couple of days. But she literally said it's like she went out one door one way and came in. Within 24 hours of being on a CPAP therapy, night and day. Now, Kelly doesn't mind me talking about this. I've talked about it on the podcast.
That was going to be my next thing.
her hair was falling out. Yeah. She had lost a lot of weight. She had tachycardia. I mean, she had even been sent to the Mayo Clinic to get testing. And it was all from a PSG, for those watching, that's in-lab sleep test.
Yeah.
And it was a miracle. So I have always been invested into the sleep side. On the breathing side, my mother was diagnosed with COPD, and my mother ended up passing from COPD. My passion has been about breathing. My career paths brought me to Philips later on in life, because then I became a single dad and needed a job to be home every night. So she has been the catalyst in my motivation for this. But as far as the breathing and sleeping, I have been involved, like I said, since 1999 and have been blessed to touch so many amazing people in sleep.
Here's what I'm really interested in, and this is kind of for both of you, but like before you made this transition to go work for Somnamed, what was your take on oral appliance therapy? Had you heard of that? Did you have anything to do with that?
Absolutely. So I worked for Philips. And so ResMed had come out with this thing called the Norval.
Yeah.
It was an oral device. And then it just kind of went away. When I was being
recruited. Except in Europe.
Yep. And when I was being recruited by Somnamed, they came to me. I was at the time director of managed care for Shield Healthcare. I'm a managed care geek as well. When they came to me, I went, oral devices, I don't know. But what I did was I listened to Lewis Myers on his pitch to me to come work for his company. But then I went around the country and reached out to people in sleep that I trusted and the Colleen Lances of the world. I mean, I could give shout outs to many people and said, listen, they're approaching me because they have this idea that they want to get an oral device, but they want me to go in and talk to these doctors about it. And pretty much the consensus was, oh, you could do that. You could do that. And so I really delved in really almost just 4 years, Emma, about oral devices. So I hope I never come across as someone who is the expert in oral device therapy. But so that was my introduction to it.
Seeing it from the doctor side, because clearly you know all about this now, Anne, right? But where did you come from before you guys, I don't know the story of how you guys met each other or like decided to suddenly podcast.
Oh, and, I love like, it.
Were you one of the doctors who was already?
No.
So you weren't already prescribing oral appliances.
It's so funny. So in this past year so far, I've already spoken at 2 sleep dentistry conferences, which is a new thing. So shout out to Jason Tierney with Transform Dental Sleep and also Greg Glassman put on an incredible sleep convergence in Melbourne. And I was really excited because not only did I go as a sleep physician, but I also convinced Naresh Punjabi to come as well.
Oh, great.
If anyone knows Naresh, he is the man when it comes to sleep apnea. I mean, he is just so brilliant and so passionate. And so it was a small group of us. And one of the things that I was sharing this past week was as a sleep fellow, you almost talk about sleep dentistry and dental devices like they're mythical creatures because you see people in medical practice say that they would like one. You're like, you should then go and find someone that will accept your insurance and perhaps create these things for you that you may put in your device. We don't know what the data is as to whether or not it will be effective for you. But we were like spending time with ENT and we were spending time in regular sleep clinic and we were seeing peds and we were seeing adults. And you saw patients where every once in a while where they actually got them. They not only had those dental devices where you would actually for teeth, but people who are also who were edentulous with no teeth had the one where it would like suck on the tongue out and it would like.
Oh, yeah.
And so you would see it and you would see that people had positive improvement with it. But more often than not, you saw that it was binary, CPAP, no CPAP.
Right.
And there was no in between. And so it was.
Or combinations of things.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely not. And yet you would attend all these lectures saying this is multi-level disorder. We recognize the AHI is a poor indicator. There's all these different endotypes or basically different reasons as to why.
Yeah.
So there should be more options.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I actually started working with Matthew that my eyes became more open to it and that I actually purposefully started looking more into the literature, trying to have a better understanding of it, and realizing that one of the reasons as to why I was so ignorant to it was because you almost never are exposed to it in any of the continuing medical education options. And so it was purely a blind spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that experience. Because I think from the patient perspective, I hear from so many people who are trying to navigate this on their own largely.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So I know in my case, I recently added an oral appliance to my CPAP and that's helped me to have lower pressure and it's been more comfortable. And so that's been a real positive for me.
Awesome.
But getting there, I don't think that my sleep specialist is bad or unusual. He just was like, I mean, you could try that, but no like referral to somebody or like, you know, idea on how I would do it, you know? So I think sometimes like I'm coming at it from almost like reverse engineering it and doing Matthew's job for him, where I'm like, I went and found this amazing dentist who's near where I live.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, hey, you should contact this doctor because he doesn't know that you exist and you're great. So that's what you're working on all the time, Matthew, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I do got to tell this story. So I how I met just a one of one, Dr. Ann, it was at sleep when we were in Charlotte. And the podcast was picking up momentum, and I would be remiss without mentioning Dr. Brennan Hedgecock.
Yeah, because I was listening back in the day.
And back then it was just two dudes, a bunch of tattoos, drinking and talking about sleep with musicians. And all. Anyways, I am at the bar, shocker to everybody, but that's where I like to gather. And I hear someone talk about a speaker that's going to happen. And I was so excited to, because I geek out. And so the next day on the floor, I hear this voice and I'm like, oh my gosh, what is coming out? It's just amazing. And where SomnaMed was set up, we were kind of around the corner from this. And I turned around the corner and I said, there's no way that that's the person talking. She has butterfly shoes on, a pink mini skirt and a yellow top and a headphone set.
And amazing shoes.
Commanding the room. And I was just blown away. And I was just, oh my gosh. And so that night, back at the bar, I saw her walk in from a dinner, and I just accosted her. I did. I just told her how much she blew my mind.
We I accost people, too. Don't worry.
Great conversation. Fine. I can honestly say this. Anne and I truly started as friends. I would lean on her for, just like I do, a lot of my friendships are women in this industry who are way bright. And you mentioned something that I never take for granted. It's called intuition. And every woman has that. And I would go to her with these hard questions. To her defense, she would take every one of my dumb questions and just listen to me and answer and take time with me. And we developed
I feel like you're often, so I'm, because I'm from Scotland, we're very self-deprecating people.
I hear that.
So whenever people are giving me compliments, I'm a bit like, oh gosh,
right?
Don't really know what to do with that. Right. But I do think that you're a little bit too down on yourself.
No.
Because you're not dumb.
I believe me, I've been called that I have an ego. I promise you that. In this situation, meeting Anne was just amazing. And so the conversation ended up turning. She had an unbelievable opportunity in New York City to do a podcast. She came to me and asked for my advice. Mm-hmm. On certain things. We met in Dallas and I said, I got an idea. What if our two worlds collided? See how our chemistry is together on camera, because we would have these awesome conversations and stuff. And so that's really how our friendship began. Yeah. Emma, thank you so much for those kind words. And you're right. I probably am very self-deprecating myself.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to this topic, you know so much. So So if anybody's listening to this podcast, they're going to love your podcast.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit about the podcast, Matthew, why you started it to begin with. And then, Anne, maybe why you wanted to embark on this crazy thing.
So I will start and then I will hand it off to Anne, kind of like we do in the podcast. This is how it really started. Dr. Brennan Hedgecock and I, he was one of my customers for oral device therapy. Brandon Hedgecock at Sleep Better Austin is one of the biggest in Texas.
Yeah.
And I was really wanting him to use my product, SomnaMed. And we would meet and have these discussions. And after a while, we really realized that we liked a lot of the same things, like music and other. And one night, again, you'll see a theme here. We might have been drinking. And so he said, you know, one of my favorite musicians of all time, you'll never know him. His name's Mark Broussard. He played in this old church in Austin. And so I excused myself to the restroom. Mark used to be my music minister when I was a youth minister.
What?
And I FaceTimed Mark in the bathroom and I said, can you do me a big favor and FaceTime me in 2 minutes? He said, sure, bro. You know. And so I go back to the table. He FaceTimes and I show Brandon. This is how Brandon is. We're starting a podcast. You know everybody. It's like he would say that. Yeah. You know this person, this person, this person. And the next morning we woke up and I thought maybe it was just a good night. Brandon talking trash. He had started an LLC. He had put money into an account, asked me to find a producer and start booking guests. That's how it started. And it literally
started. And that was how long ago?
A little over 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Now the podcast has grown to something completely different and partnerships and sponsorships are different now. Now the podcast with Anne involved is at a different level. And Brandon is still very much part of the podcast, but Anne and I are now the official co-host of Sleeping Around the podcast. Anne came in and put her Anne on it. You know, she went, You know, because I asked her, I said, come be on the podcast with me. She's like, okay, if I do, this is what needs to happen. And of course, I was like, yes, absolutely, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And so now where we are in this rendition, which I think is better, of the podcast is something completely different. And I'll turn it over to you now, and you can kind of tell them what we do now.
Sure. So now the goal is really to be appealing to a broad audience. Everyone right. who, if you're in medicine, whether you're a sleep physician or not, you're going to walk away and you're going to be like, didn't know that. That was interesting. Heard that before. Now it's going to be stuck in my head. To you're a person who doesn't know you have a sleep disorder, or you do have right. a sleep disorder, or you're just like, I want something entertaining. It's going to meet all of those needs, because yep. the goal is really to highlight the intersection of sleep across everything, but with a real focus on lifestyle, culture, and wellness. The reason is that what I've learned as a sleep medicine physician is that no one cares about sleep. Sleep gets right. in the way of the things I want to do, right? Yep. And so instead, when you talk about things that people want, which is I want to be well, I want to be active, I want to have fun, I want to see cool things, sleep is relevant to all of those. So we really just yes. focus on that. And so we now have broadened it where we'll do podcasts where it's just me and Matthew. We'll have guests, and we have guests from all walks of life. We have had awesome guests, Rachel Nesmith, one of my patients from Texas. Yes. She has narcolepsy. She's a musician. She's amazing. Greg Friedman, he is the CEO of Peachtree. And I mean, an incredible story. We actually did two episodes, pre and post Peachtree, to just demonstrate how sleep can be relevant and also what that journey can look like, yes. as well as musicians like Juliana Rankin. So really trying to maintain the approachability of that. It doesn't matter who you are. I don't care right. if you're a C-suite executive or a person who's on a medical journey, this is going to be relevant to you. And one of the things that was very important was that we are always delivering it in a way that is balanced, that it's not just me and Matthew's opinion, but we're going to also bring the science. We're going to have those yes. moments where we're talking about what is the pathophysiology, what is the science? Because even if you are an average person on your own wellness journey, you need to hear those words so that they can become a part of something, not necessarily your vocabulary that you're using, but when you do seek out your own medical care, that you don't feel like you're in a foreign land. And so right. really trying to bridge the gap of how do we take a patient-directed approach, an individual-directed approach, and make it relevant to everyone.
Right.
So I don't know if you guys would relate to this, but things have kind of evolved since I started my podcast, but I know that now the two big things that I'm always focused on are how do you reach the 80% of people that don't have a diagnosis, right, with, mm-hmm. with obstructive sleep apnea?
Right.
And also, how do you give people access to all of the treatment options? Because I think that's still a huge problem. And I think the two feed into each other, because right. you end up with people who say, and I don't know if you've seen this in practice, Anne, but people who say, I'm not even going to test for any sort of right. sleep problem right. because I don't want a CPAP. That just doesn't seem like something I want to do.
Yeah.
So to me, it almost feels like the more we can normalize talking about sleep altogether,
right.
the more that, you know, and improve like pathways for people getting testing. So I know what I did want to ask you about. I could literally talk to you both all day. So a couple of people, I know that we've both interviewed Keith Matheny.
My man.
And one of the things that's super interesting to me about like how he offers oral appliance therapy physically inside the same building that people are going to see an ENT. Yeah. And there's also, I actually haven't interviewed him, but Dennis Huang has a similar yeah. mm-hmm. approach in Kaiser Permanente where he's offering oral appliance therapy early to mm-hmm. people and they can get it right there.
Right.
So how much do you see that being like a way to kind of move forward in terms of making things easier for patients? And maybe, Anne, you can speak to some of the problems, because I've talked to doctors as well who are like, that wouldn't work in my setup, you know.
Well, I'll go first. I think Keith and I met really right after I started working with SomnoMed. We ended up having a dinner. We ended up having kind of a similar past. He played baseball in college, and I ended up playing against him. So it was kind of cool. We had that connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played at Baylor, and I played at a really small college called McNeese State. We ended up really hitting it off. He had started something in Dallas at Collin County ENT, his ENT, where he brought this amazing sleep dentist, Heath Roberts, in. Heath has been doing this for 20 years on a 1099 contract. In the state of Texas, which is very legal and ethical, that's all I do, they would actually bring a sleep dentist in-house. So EO486, so that's the code for our oral devices, would get billed through medical insurance. He had been challenged with this. And of course, knowing me, I said, I want to take this all over. Keith is also the CEO of US ENT, which has almost 4,000 ENTs across the country.
And the sleep vigil thing and all the other stuff. I don't even know when he sleeps.
So the RPM side, he is just, so Keith and I, not only are we friends, but I work with him. And so these are one of the partners that I have with SomnoMed. SomnoMed is actually part of that GPO. And so it is my job and SomnoMed's job to go in there and train sleep dentists to work with ENTs. I'll give you two examples and then I'll pass it over to Ann. Yes, at Collin County ENT, we do that. Well, also in Austin, Texas, we do it. In one of the groups over there with Dr. Wasmith, who's an ENT, Dr. Ian Bronner goes in twice a week on a 1099 contract. Right across the street from him is another ENT office. They don't have a dentist come in-house. They send directly to Brandon Hedgecock. It's like Better Austin. But we have an agreement.
And I've seen that work as well, where there's, rather than my experience, like the doctor is saying, I'm sending you here.
Right.
That's a bit more joined up.
I also have a place in Dallas to where the dentist actually has an office right next door to the ENT center. So that patient knows they're going to one place to get help. Yeah. What Keith preaches very well is saying, hey, man, I'm good with the ears, nose, and throat. But for breathing, we need somebody. So I want to be very clear during this podcast, because there's rumors out there and all that. SomnoMed and Matthew Allard, I only advocate to work with ENTs if they use a sleep dentist. Because I believe that what sleep dentistry does is so specific, and they are trained and they are credentialed, and you have to have that to work with inside the mouth. And so, yes, I have dentists all over the country that works with USENT that get referred in or they come in to do oral device therapy.
Cool. And that's cool. But what I want to know from you, Anne, is, because I've talked to a lot of doctors over the years, and it's sometimes not quite as simple as that, right? There's insurance companies and there's larger healthcare providers where that might not be part of the setup. So what's your experience?
So I'd first say that the ideal experience, and this even reflects back on the conversation we were having before this, of how do we improve awareness and how do you touch the people who have sleep apnea and don't realize that they do. And talking about sleep health is remembering that even if you have sleep apnea, the likelihood is that you probably also have 2 to 3 other sleep disorders. Bruxism, periodic limb movement, insomnia, circadian disorder, restless leg, you name it, right? And so first and foremost, it's important to recognize that a lot of sleep practices have devolved into a respirology practice, which is a check mark. I've done my sleep study in lab or home, and here's your CPAP or APAP, right?
I couldn't agree with you more.
And so the challenge is, first and foremost, acknowledging that model is wrong, irrespective of the inclusion of sleep dentistry, because sleep has over 70 different sleep disorders. So first and foremost, taking a step back and going, why is the person here, and what is the sleep health in totality? The second is, instead of saying, how do I do this point solution? How do I say a sleep doctor and a sleep dentist? How do I actually create comprehensive models of care that are holistic so that I can have the sleep psychologist and I can have the ENT and I can have the pulmonologist and a neurologist and a dentist, et cetera? And so I think in the ideal world, it is kind of creating a command center that is helping the patient to be able to navigate all of that. In regards to the current obstacles that exist, there are several, and some of them start even before you're talking about clinical practice. First and foremost, the education. You have two groups who are being educated in two separate independent silos and are not.
And neither, like before you get to the specializing, neither are getting enough training in sleep,
100%.
Right?
Right.
Even before you get to sleep dentistry or sleep medicine, there is anywhere between 0 to 4 hours spent in that medical training. And then for medicine, once you go into fellowship, like a regular residency, most residencies do not have any mandatory. At this point, what ACGME has made mandatory, which is still a slap in the face, is fatigue mitigation education, where I'm like, what you're talking about is sleepiness, not fatigue.
Yeah. Right.
And so there still is a lot of this misclassification and terminology. Now, when you look at what is the current setup, most medical practices do not have dentistry part of it. So
right.
At my healthcare institute, we have pediatric dentistry. We used to have adult dentistry. The adult dentistry now has segregated away. So when it's a part of the healthcare system, that means that I have a nice step in of that we all have the same insurance. So there's
right.
not the ignorance on my end of what are the barriers that you as a patient are going to experience when I send you to this dentist.
Yes.
Not only is it a matter of me knowing who the dentist is, it's a matter of me being very mama bear on my patient. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want you getting stuck with a bill. How much is this going to cost you?
And that's so, like, I feel like that's so common. The number of people I talk to who, even if they have a doctor who's all over it, who's like, I know a great dentist over here that specializes in dental sleep medicine and refers them, still the insurance part of it is so hard.
I could say this unequivocally, and right, there's not a lot of things that I could say definite and say this is true. If anybody who is watching this podcast would get a hold of a link, I will make sure that she has a link. I will make sure that every single one of those dentists is fully insured, takes the insurance. I don't care what region you are. I agree that I literally started with SunMed and fired 30 something dentists who were charging cash and not just hidden fees. It needs to be covered. I work with some of the largest. Baylor Scott and White is not a small group. They're in out of Waco, Texas. I'm sending 75 referrals a month to a sleep dentist there. Kelsey Siebold is its own ACO in Houston. It has 62 something clinics. I have two separate sleep dentists that work with them. I'm telling you, yes.
People are well off in Texas.
Well, I guess who's in Texas? See what I just did there? So here goes the self-deprecating out the window.
So just a quick question on that. When you're saying that they accept insurance, they're accepting a medical insurance or they're accepting a dental insurance?
Yes.
So that's the piece. So I think that's really what the conversation needs to be around, right?
Absolutely.
And that's the area where I think that there's ignorance that's causing this divide. And so it's not a matter of that Matthew is able to connect you with the right dentist who accepts the insurance. Yes. If you have medical insurance and the right partnership exists between your sleep physician and the sleep physician would be able to get that appliance potentially also approved. And as long as that the dentist is able to be able to utilize whatever other pieces for that. Now, this is, again, a breakdown of just healthcare in general, is that for some reason we stop at the mouth and we say that that's this optional thing, even though we know that there's so many contributing factors from there. And so in order for there to be an evolved version of what this would look like, it is going to require that there is an ability for there to be a standardized expectation for a dentist to get a reimbursement that's going to be from medical insurance for there to be more seamless. Now, again, there are going to be people who are like, I don't care what it costs. This is what I want. And that's fine. I'm not saying that has to be done. But when you're talking about the obstacles
when you're talking about bringing it to the masses,
obstacles that exist are going to be me knowing who does it, who's reliable. You're not just any dentist who decided today that you're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
That there's an accountability structure and communication between the treating professionals and for the patient to have very clear expectations and for the roles to be well defined of like, if this is not working, who is the troubleshooter, right?
Yes.
It can't be this and it can't be
that. And Jan, get fired up because here's something else that I love about her. So as soon as we get rocking and rolling, managed care comes up and changes the rules on us as we're going. So for a period of time, you would get a certain reimbursement. I won't say anybody specific, Blue Cross Blue Shield. But just as of February 1st, they changed their reimbursement for oral device therapy. And every single one of the large six do this. So it takes somebody or somebody's eyes on this
to try and navigate
to watch
it.
That. So yeah. That's constantly changing as well, Emma. So yeah. It's a, I don't want you thinking that I have this one time singular, I'm the bet. No, but it takes effort. It takes like Ann said, a team, but managed
care. But at least we're working on it.
Oh, absolutely.
Go team.
A lot of people on your podcast will have no idea that Medicare covers EO486. Like what?
I don't know.
Always.
My podcast listeners are pretty well educated at this point. I think they might know that. But
so you asked a question earlier. I talked to some physicians just last week that didn't even know what an oral device was.
Oh, yeah.
So there is so much going out there. That, and the first reaction is it costs too much money. I could go buy a Zepa, a Boil and Buy. So there is so much out there that people don't know that's what excites me.
Yeah.
And doing podcasts and going, because people will,
got a job to do.
They will write and they'll go, I had no idea about this certain fact that Ann said. I guarantee it.
Okay. So I keep a list all the time of all the different people that I follow and I write little random questions. So my list for Dr. Morris is so long, but one of the things, I don't do TikTok.
It's okay.
I don't either. Emma, yes.
Instagram.
But I do do Instagram, so you know, which is fine. But I feel like there was a TikTok. I might have seen it on Instagram, but I believe it started as a TikTok where you were talking about a patient. I mean, I want to talk about generally this whole insurance company taking away people's CPAPs as an issue at all. But then there was specifically, I think it was Trey who lives with narcolepsy and sleep apnea. And I have a lot of friends with narcolepsy at this point, and the idea of somebody who's already dealing with the symptoms of narcolepsy, then being told they have a specific amount of time to get used to having something on their face, and if you can't, we're just going to take away your therapy, is just so maddening to me, but I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, so you're correct. It was Trey, and Trey is, I think, near and dear to a lot of us because he is just doing amazing artistry with awareness and with hats and shirts and everything else. And he's out there definitely spreading a lot of really good information as well. And Emma, if you can make sure his links are up, please do.
I sure will. Yeah.
And so he had put up a video about how he was getting his CPAP taken away because he didn't meet the criteria that are based by insurances to say that you're quote unquote adherent with the therapy. And
4 hours a day.
And we hate the word adherent.
Yeah, 4 hours a day for 5 days out of the 7 day week. So think about that for a minute. 4 hours a day for 5 days out of seven makes you compliant. You have to do that for 90 days.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so with that stated, had to bring it back to the DME, and then the DME had said something along the lines of, well, maybe better luck next time type of thing. And it just, it infuriated me for several reasons. First and foremost, how dare any insurance mandate the recommended therapeutic intervention because a patient is either struggling with it or purposely having periods where they're not utilizing it. That is the role and responsibility of the partnership between a physician or APP and the person who is on that journey. Mm-hmm. There is not a better example of prejudice that insurances should be held legally liable for prejudice against individuals with sleep disorders because they do this incessantly.
Yes.
They create barriers with their denials, their delays, and their obstructions, and then have the audacity of not only taking that away, but mandating a repeat sleep study to prove that you still have that disease.
Yep.
Yeah.
There is not another disorder is akin to that. If I had hypertension, if I had diabetes, if my hemoglobin A1C was 12 and it's supposed to be less than 6,
right,
and my doctor prescribed me metformin, I was supposed to be taking 200 milligrams twice a day, and I'm making these things up. So if it's not medically accurate, then I'm not an endocrinologist.
I bet they're dead on.
I came back and my hemoglobin A1C was 11. The first question my doctor would ask me is, are you taking your medication as prescribed? And then he would work with me on that. If I said,
and he
that,
wouldn't take it away.
He wouldn't. If I said I was taking 100 milligrams every other day, he'd be like, that makes sense. That's why you're not medically better. That's why you're not sleeping better, as in with obstructive sleep apnea. And so there has been enough studies demonstrated, although people want to talk about, well, CPAP, they're so non-adherent. There's been enough studies demonstrated. And I can say very proudly, our DME at Geisinger has done an incredible job. Our adherence is greater than 80%.
That was my next question.
Because there are things you can do to help with adherence.
So are you running a CPAP clinic? How are you doing that?
So they have very, very tight follow-up on making sure that they're ongoing troubleshooting, people checking and making sure that they're utilizing it. So there has been incredible work that had been done out of UPenn. Last name is escaping me right now. It's Amy. Oh, come back to me. She is one of the leaders in doing this
on CPAP compliance.
Right.
Yeah. And utilizing the programs like, here's the text message, and then here's the call, and then here's the coming in. Programs like Monitor by Ed Mezzarin, one of my great friends.
Hey.
I mean, it's helping to improve the life.
Matthew knows everyone.
He's on our podcast. And so really, it's a matter of moving the model so that we are not stigmatizing. You're a bad patient. You did a bad job.
I've heard patient stories from across the spectrum, right? People who have had experiences like that where there's a clinic and they're following up and they really feel supported in that journey as they're trying to get used to CPAP. And I was kind of at the other end of the spectrum where they gave me like a plastic bag with a CPAP in it.
Good luck.
And a mask that didn't fit my face and just went, good luck with that. Yeah. And I think one of the things about that you just touched on with them getting in touch with patients is the patient feeling as though, oh, am I the only one struggling with this? Whereas if you reach out and you say, are you having problems? Mm-hmm. Like, what can we do to address that? It makes everything much more normalized, like that some people do struggle with this and how do we troubleshoot?
Well, okay, so it's education, like I'm big on being proactive. So Emma, your platform is excellent for that. One of the things, Anne and I share a lot of passions. One of them is this managed care issue. And I was pretty bold. Thank God I'm not on TikTok, you know, because my answer to that was I could put an oral device on every single one of these patients, severe or not, were indicated for mild, moderate, and managed care cannot take that out of their mouth. So I know for a fact that at least during the pandemic, right, and even the recall, when Phillips had a recall, my life got crazy. I can honestly say any oral device company, we could put an oral device in those patients' mouth and someone cannot physically come and take it out of their mouth.
Yeah. You're not letting insurance live up to what our expectations are.
So when I step up like Ann does, right? When I step up like Ann does, people go, well, is he correct? I am correct so far on that. They could take someone's CPAP, but they cannot take an oral device out of their mouth, period.
And I've had patients who have paid for their CPAP out of pocket because of that. They're like, I know I'm going to struggle.
There's a ton of people.
I'm going to struggle, and so therefore I'm going to do that.
There's a black market, which everybody knows about, Emma. We could do a whole podcast on that, on CPAPs, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Because there are people like Trey out there who have to have one.
Yeah, but there's also organizations like the American Sleep Apnea Association, right? And they will make sure that they're getting that to you.
Yeah.
Then there's also organizations.
For anyone listening who's not familiar, they have a wonderful program where if you have equipment that you don't need. I feel like so many people with really excellent insurance coverage end up bombarded with CPAP supplies and they don't necessarily use everything. And so there is a program at the American Sleep Apnea Association where you can send that stuff and they'll get it to people that need it.
For someone who's been on a CPAP as long as like my dad had been, right? There is closets full of tubing, of filters, of masks, of all this.
Yeah.
And there are people out there. So you're absolutely right.
So I definitely want you guys to tell everybody where can they find your podcast, like all the other stuff that you're doing. Where's the best place to connect on social media? Tell us all that.
And go ahead.
Sure. So for me personally, I'm damn good sleep. That's right. I put the damn in good sleep. Stands for doctor.
D-A-M-M.
Yes, stands for Dr. Anne Marie Moore.
There you go.
D-A-M-M. And so you can check me out on damngoodsleep.com. Also, all of my social media handles are damn good sleep. So Twitter, Instagram, X, Threads, TikTok, you can find me.
And she does them all.
Yeah, I do them all. Yeah, why not? One,
it's amazing.
Just spreading a lot of stuff. The other piece, though, that I also want to make sure that I purposefully call out, because I'm sure you're sharing this as well, is also I do work across a lot of advocacy organizations.
Yes.
One that I think is highly relevant to these efforts is Project Sleep. And so if you are struggling with sleep issues, please check out their hotline. Their hotline is going to be able to give you some information, some directionality. If I've learned nothing else from Julie Flygar, the CEO and founder of Project Sleep, it is all about social support. Yeah. And social support even before you're diagnosed, because other people are going to help you. And so some of the obstacles that you were saying, Emma, is all about anticipatory guidance. And if your physician or your APP is failing you and giving you the right anticipatory guidance, lean on your community. Because that's really what we're trying to build here as a community. Yeah. Matthew, can you tell us all about where you can find Sleeping Around the Podcast?
I can, absolutely. So Sleeping Around the Podcast, it's got a pretty cool name, but also on YouTube. You can like and subscribe. You can see us there. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're actually on X, I hear, and we're on TikTok. I just don't run those. Dan does. So Sleeping Around the Podcast. One of the
you have a Dan.
And we also have Spotify and Apple iTunes. So
there you go.
Oh,
anywhere
you
that
go.
You could get podcasts. But one of the things that I want to talk about is that I'm really excited about this latest news that just got announced because of my beloved partner here, is that we also partnered with Neurology Live. I mean, who would have thought when I was in Brandon's duplex, painted wall, interviewing Mark Broussard for our very first episode, that I would be part of something so amazing. And so this partnership has just recently taken off. So it has the damn good sleep portion of it, but also the SAP, Sleeping Around the Podcast portion. So again, with we're teaming up with Neurology Live. The future is very bright for us. We will be at sleep. I don't know when this is going to air, but Ann and I will be hosting.
It's going to be
sleep.
Before that.
Yeah. And we're actually going to have Miss Emma on our podcast.
Thanks,
and so we are traveling. And so people always ask me, can I come to Austin and be on the podcast? Well, you can if we're in Austin. For example, we're getting ready to fly up to Portland. So we are truly sleeping around. Yeah, and so one of the things that we do is we also give like a rating scale of the hotels that we stay in. I travel all...
Oh, I thought you were going to say for your guests. And I was going to be like, oh my God.
No, but we do, because I travel all the time and so does Anne. And so people started saying, oh my gosh, you guys stay in these cool hotels. How about some tricks of the trade or whatever? And so we're kind of branching off into those directions as well.
It's awesome.
We have amazing guests.
More of a like lifestyle
brand
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we have some amazing guests coming up in 2024. Some that are going to blow your mind. They're going to blow your mind.
Cool.
Two other new things that will be on the horizon or just launching as well. So first and only sleep medical education ecosystem in the world, Sleep Wake Advisor Institute. That has launched in February and will be growing.
Explain more about that. So you're having people talk about case studies?
So it's going to be everything. So Sleep Wake Advisor Institute is intentionally developed to not only talk about sleep, but sleep in its intersection across all of medicine. Mm-hmm. So it has a natural cross-section with cardiology advisor, neurology advisor, rare disease advisor. And so we have some of these where it will be talking curbside, where physicians or patients can send in a case of like, hey, this is what's going on. I don't know what to do next. Help me. One of the key opinion leaders who are expert in that area would give some feedback. We're going to have Ann's Reading Corner, where I'll be doing some selections of different published papers and giving you the things that matter. Why was this study done? What did we find? How does this impact clinical practice today? Right? Those are things that people need to understand, and it's going to be nice video information. Neurology Live, we already have some content out there, and that's in neurology and sleeping around intersection. And then finally, we're also going to be partnering with DocWire News, and that's going to be super fun, because our hope with that is that we'll be looking at putting on a live conference potentially as early as next year. And that really is going to be a goal of being able to bring together all the right stakeholders for a really fun and informative conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. And you're going to carry on seeing your own patients as well as all that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, listen, to both of you, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
You're
Emma, it's such a dream. I knocked it off my bucket list, Anne. I'm on Emma's podcast. This is awesome.
Right?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, I'm over on Instagram. My handle there is sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe or follow, rate and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.